Extract number 1. Read the questions.
Some of the reason why we aren't, collectively, so good at friendship is that we don't have a clear idea of what a really good friend might be like. The ideal friend knows how to show weakness. The ideal friend doesn't try to prove how robust and successful they are. On the contrary, quite often they let us know awkward and potentially embarrassing things about themselves. They show how much they trust us by confessing failings and sorrows which would open them up to possible humiliation from the world beyond. They're genuinely interested in our sorrows and difficulties. And yet, they're not shocked or even surprised by the weird and stupid things we've done. They're not judgmental. They don't come down harshly and critically on our weaknesses because they know themselves well enough to be alert to their own and more troubled sides. And they do us the graceful favour of assuming that behind the seams, we are as radically imperfect as they are. A true friend helps build our self-understanding. There are so many things we don't entirely comprehend about who we are. We get agitated or defensive, and we don't really know why. We might have some strong opinions, but it can be difficult to explain really why these ideas matter to us. The right friend listens and helps us piece together the best account of our fears and excitements. They help us think. More often than it's comfortable to admit, we don't quite know what we think until a proper friend gently asks us to expand on a thought, to explain why we're impressed by it, and to find good answers to possible objections. They see the potential in what we're saying when we can't. They help us to like ourselves. The good friend likes us in ways we're not easily able to like ourselves. It's more obvious from our point of view what's disappointing or frustrating about us than what's attractive. We tend to think that a true friend must be someone we spend a lot of time with, but actually, the ideal other becomes part of us. We internalize who they are, how they speak, the way they smile, the way they pause or get enthusiastic. They continue to inhabit our brain even when we haven't been in touch for a while or when they're far away. The good friend is always with us.
Now, listen again.
Some of the reason why we aren't, collectively, so good at friendship is that we don't have a clear idea of what a really good friend might be like. The ideal friend knows how to show weakness. The ideal friend doesn't try to prove how robust and successful they are. On the contrary, quite often they let us know awkward and potentially embarrassing things about themselves. They show how much they trust us by confessing failings and sorrows which would open them up to possible humiliation from the world beyond. They're genuinely interested in our sorrows and difficulties. And yet, they're not shocked or even surprised by the weird and stupid things we've done. They're not judgmental. They don't come down harshly and critically on our weaknesses because they know themselves well enough to be alert to their own and more troubled sides. And they do us the graceful favour of assuming that behind the scenes, we are as radically imperfect as they are. A true friend helps build our self-understanding. There are so many things we don't entirely comprehend about who we are. We get agitated or defensive, and we don't really know why. We might have some strong opinions, but it can be difficult to explain really why these ideas matter to us. The right friend listens and helps us piece together the best account of our fears and excitements. They help us think. More often than it's comfortable to admit, we don't quite know what we think until a proper friend gently asks us to expand on a thought, to explain why we're impressed by it, and to find good answers to possible objections. They see the potential in what we're saying when we can't. They help us to like ourselves. The good friend likes us in ways we're not easily able to like ourselves. It's more obvious from our point of view what's disappointing or frustrating about us than what's attractive. We tend to think that a true friend must be someone we spend a lot of time with. But actually, the ideal other becomes part of us. We internalize who they are, how they speak, the way they smile, the way they pause or get enthusiastic. They continue to inhabit our brain even when we haven't been in touch for a while or when they're far away. The good friend is always with us.
Extract number 2. Read the questions.
Today, I'm joined in the studio by Gillian Moody. In 2010, Gillian and her husband Simeon, together with their three daughters, set off in a camper van to circumnavigate the globe. Simeon wrote a book about it, The Long and Winding Road, and it's a great read. So what was the aim of the trip?
Initially, the thought of spending a year with our children and with my husband was just amazing. I'd gone back to work quite quickly after having each of them, and I worked quite long hours. So selfishly, I thought it would be amazing just to have a year with them.
Did you? Did you really?
Yeah, I know.
I would have thought completely the opposite. Oh,
well, no. The thought of being in a camper van with nothing filled a lot of people with horror, but I think we just sort of had this blind faith that it would all be fine. And it was, because we all got back okay.
You did.
So that's, yeah.
So your daughters, Edie, Beth and Ella, is that right? They were 8, 10 and 12 at the time. So obviously you had to have faced the decision of taking them out of school for a year.
That's right, which of course initially they were delighted at, thought was great. And it was a big decision. We understood, obviously, that they still needed to learn. But interestingly, the schools, when we went to talk to the head teachers, thought it was amazing. Mm-hmm. Both of them said they'll learn more in a year than they will in the classroom. And actually, we were really lucky because both the schools were happy to keep in touch. So Ella did some work with her school online. She would do work and post it back and her teachers would mark it. We used all her books for the year Beth would have gone into. And then with Edie, her school gave us a pack of work and said, look, if she can get through these targets in a year, that would be great. So we managed to do it. But that became hit and miss because I think, right, we'll do the work on these days, but suddenly you can't get Wi-Fi. Mm. So you can't get onto BBC Bite Size, for example. So you just do it as and when.
So I mentioned it was by camper van. How basic was that camper van?
It was basic. We bought it off eBay. And fortunately, we have an amazing mechanic in our village, Blue, who is a camper van nut. So as soon as he knew about the trip and he knew about the camper van, he was just on it and he upgraded the suspension and we had a bigger water tank put in. But there was no shower, no toilet, had a pop-up top. So there were two beds there, or upstairs, as I fondly called it for the year. A rock and roll bed downstairs where two people could sleep. And then Edie, who was 8 when we left, had a hammock that went over the driver's seat. So most of the time we all stayed in there.
What was the most rewarding aspect of travelling through so many different countries? Was it the people, or was it, did you learn so much about the countries and the culture?
I think it was learning about the people and the culture. I think that we'd never been to the Middle East, so driving through there was incredible.
Did anyone scream at all?
Throughout the whole year. Yeah, there was lots of screaming. There was. I mean, the children were great. And I think what became clear really quickly was that they had to be part of everything that happened. Because if something went wrong, we couldn't just go off into another room and say to them, you know, go to your bedrooms while we talk about this. There was nowhere to go unless you sort of went outside the van and walked around.
And did you take lots of guidebooks with you? I mean, did you know, plan in advance, you knew what you were going to see when you arrived somewhere? Or did you think, no, I'm going to just experience this and then find out about it later?
I did buy guidebooks for the main countries because I like to be organised. So I was the one who was sitting there when we were planning the route. I mean, before we left, I remember saying to Sim, I would really like it if we had all our campsites booked throughout Europe. And he just looked at me and went, okay. And it became clear really quickly that that wasn't going to happen. But it was useful to have those guidebooks there. And I was also the sensible one who went onto the Foreign and Commonwealth Office website to check that the next country we were going into was safe.
Oh, thank you so much. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Now, listen again.
Today, I'm joined in the studio by Gillian Moody. In 2010, Gillian and her husband Simeon, together with their three daughters, set off in a camper van to circumnavigate the globe. Simeon wrote a book about it, The Long and Winding Road, and it's a great read. So what was the aim of the trip?
Initially, the thought of spending a year with our children and with my husband was just amazing. I'd gone back to work quite quickly after having each of them, and I worked quite long hours. So selfishly, I thought it would be amazing just to have a year with them.
Did you? Did you really?
Yeah, I know.
I would have thought completely the opposite. Oh,
well,
no.
The thought of being in a camper van with nothing filled a lot of people with horror. But I think we just sort of had this blind faith that it would all be fine. And it was, because we all got back okay.
You did.
So that's, yeah.
So your daughters, Edie, Beth and Ella, is that right? They were 8, 10 and 12 at the time. So obviously you had to face the decision of taking them out of school for a year.
That's right, which of course initially they were delighted at, thought it was great. And it was a big decision. We understood, obviously, that they still needed to learn. But interestingly, the schools, when we went to talk to the head teachers, thought it was amazing. Mm-hmm. Both of them said they'll learn more in a year than they will in the classroom. And actually, we were really lucky because both the schools were happy to keep in touch. So Ella did some work with her school online. She would do work and post it back and her teachers would mark it. We used all her books for the year Beth would have gone into. And then with Edie, her school gave us a pack of work and said, look, if she can get through these targets in a year, that would be great. So we managed to do it. But that became hit and miss because think, right, we'll do the work on these days, but suddenly you can't get Wi-Fi. Mm. So you can't get onto BBC Bite Size, for example. So you just do it as and when.
So I mentioned it was by camper van. How basic was that camper van?
It was basic. We bought it off eBay. And fortunately, we have an amazing mechanic in our village, Blue, who is a camper van nut. So as soon as he knew about the trip and he knew about the camper van, he was just on it and he upgraded the suspension and we had a bigger water tank put in. But there was no shower, no toilet, had a pop-up top. So there were two beds there, or upstairs, as I fondly called it for the year. A rock and roll bed downstairs where two people could sleep. And then Edie, who was 8 when we left, had a hammock that went over the driver's seat. So most of the time we all stayed in there.
What was the most rewarding aspect of travelling through so many different countries? Was it the people, or was it, did you learn so much about the countries and the culture?
I think it was learning about the people and the culture. I think that we'd never been to the Middle East, so driving through there was incredible.
Did anyone scream at all?
Throughout the whole year? Yeah, there was lots of screaming. There was. I mean, the children were great. And I think what became clear really quickly was that they had to be part of everything that happened, because if something went wrong, we couldn't just go off into another room and say to them, you know, go to your bedrooms while we talk about this. There was nowhere to go unless you sort of went outside the van and walked around.
And did you take lots of guidebooks with you? I mean, did you know, plan in advance, you knew what you were going to see when you arrived somewhere? Or did you think, no, I'm going to just experience this and then find out about it later?
I did buy guidebooks for the main countries because I like to be organised. So I was the one who was sitting there when we were planning the route. I mean, before we left, I remember saying to Sim, I would really like it if we had all our campsites booked throughout Europe. And he just looked at me and went, okay. And it became clear really quickly that that wasn't going to happen. But it was useful to have those guidebooks there. And I was also the sensible one who went onto the Foreign and Commonwealth Office website to check that the next country we were going into was safe.
Oh, thank you so much. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
That is the end of part 1.